This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, March 15th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, thanks to the artificial intelligence boom, chipmaker NVIDIA's profits are sky high. But the company has also become one of the business world's hottest venture capital investors. We'll find out what NVIDIA's investment strategy means for the future of AI from WSJ Semiconductors reporter Asa Fitch. And then, to treat complex medical conditions, doctors have a new approach, tweaking disease-causing mutations directly in patient cells. WSJ senior writer Betsy McKay breaks down how it works and how it might go wrong. But first, NVIDIA has become an investor darling as its AI chip business has boomed. More quietly, the company has been doing some investing itself. Last year, NVIDIA invested in about 36 startups, more than tripling its activity from the year before. WSJ Semiconductors reporter Asa Fitch is here to tell us more about the company's strategy. Asa, where is NVIDIA investing its money?
Well, NVIDIA is, of course, the company that's at the pinnacle of the AI boom. So a lot of what it's investing in is just things related to AI. So you see investments in companies that are making big AI, large language models, investments in companies using AI for drug discovery, for robotic surgery, for all kinds of things that sort of intersect with AI and thus intersect with NVIDIA's products because it's deeply enmeshed in what's going on with AI right now.
What does NVIDIA look for when it considers investing in a company?
So NVIDIA, like some other corporate venture capital players, has a couple of goals. One goal, obviously, is to make a financial return. The other major part of doing this kind of thing is to grow the world of companies that, and the world of technologies where your products are used. People in the industry call it the ecosystem, if you will. But it basically just means you want to invest in companies that are using your stuff and that are going to develop more technology around your stuff.
So it sounds like the upsides for NVIDIA are that the companies it invests in could grow and make money for NVIDIA, and they could also use NVIDIA products, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, NVIDIA right now is on the top of the world, but it, of course, needs to maintain that position on the top of the world, wants to, obviously. And part of doing that when you're in that kind of position is investing, making sure you make investments that grow the users of your products, not only today, but well into the future.
What are some of the potential risks for NVIDIA?
The risks NVIDIA faces are some of the same risks that all venture investments face. Many startups fail. So getting into this business of investing in these younger companies that haven't yet proven themselves in itself is just it's a tricky business and doesn't always succeed. And of course, there's no guarantee that NVIDIA is going to meet its non-financial goals too by making these investments. So they are bets.
How about the startups? Why should they accept money from NVIDIA?
The startups have a lot to gain from having NVIDIA on their capital table. One thing is just the name recognition of NVIDIA. NVIDIA is the third largest listed company in the U.S. now. So having that stamp of approval from NVIDIA for younger startups really just means something beyond the financial contribution the company makes. Typically, these venture capital investors on the corporate side don't put in a ton of money to companies. The biggest investors in the startups are typically your standard venture capital players like Sequoia Capital, others. So NVIDIA doesn't necessarily write the biggest check, but it can be super big for these companies as they get started out and try to gain traction for themselves with customers. They can say, hey, NVIDIA supports us.
What does it potentially tell us about where AI is going?
NVIDIA is one of the companies that's shaping where AI is going. It's placing a lot of money down on some of these areas. So some of the investments that NVIDIA makes, potentially, we'll see how it goes, but some of the investments could help shape what AI looks like in the years ahead.
That was our semiconductors reporter, Asa Fitch. Coming up, editing disease-causing genes in real time is no longer in the realm of science fiction. We'll hear about the new tech making it possible after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Conditions as different as sickle cell disease and certain kinds of heart disease have something important in common. They're underpinned by mutations in our genes. Scientists have recently learned how to treat some of those conditions by introducing cells that have been edited with bioengineering tools like CRISPR. But the future that some are betting on is an even more sophisticated approach called in vivo gene editing, in which therapies edit patient cells while they're still in their bodies. My colleague Cordelia James spoke with WSJ senior writer Betsy McKay about how the approach works and its potential risks.
Betsy, how do experimental therapies like in vivo gene editing work?
The treatment that regulators approved last year for sickle cell disease, that treatment is based on what's called ex vivo editing, which means you take the cells out of a patient, you edit them in a laboratory, and then put them back in the patient's body. And the patient has to undergo a lot of conditioning or chemotherapy to make room for this to happen. It involves laboratories. It's a complex process, but very successful. These newer drugs are in vivo. In other words, a drug is developed, a therapy that is given to a patient, infused into their body, and does the editing inside your body. There are just a few trials underway and more getting underway now, so it's really just getting started.
What kinds of conditions could in vivo gene editing treat?
Many of these in vivo editing inside the body treatments are for different forms of cardiovascular disease. One is for a sometimes hereditary, sometimes not, genetic disease that leads to heart failure. Another is, and a couple of companies are studying using gene editing to lower cholesterol.
So ex vivo gene editing happens outside the body. In vivo happens inside. How else is in vivo gene editing different from ex vivo gene editing?
There's a few ways. So the way it works is that you get an infusion, looks like an IV bag in your arm. This medicine contains, at least in those that are being tested now, contain these fat bubbles called lipid nanoparticles, which some people may recognize are also part of the mRNA COVID vaccines. These bubbles carry gene editing machinery to the liver and then look for the spot on the genome that they're trying to find and use it to turn off the gene. That's how they work. The way they're different is obviously they're inside the body. They may be easier on patients, these types of treatments, because you're doing it inside the body. You're not having to take cells out and then put them back in. And putting them back in requires patients to have chemotherapy to clear out cells that are already there. Also, that ex vivo approach works for only certain types of cells from certain parts of the body. If you have a heart disease or a brain disease, you can't really easily take cells out of the body from organs. As described to me, you need to find a way to get to them in the body. So essentially, what scientists say is ultimately they believe that in vivo approaches are more promising in the sense that they can reach more people. It probably will be less expensive because you won't need as many resources, laboratories, and so forth. And finally, it's an approach that's really also being looked at as a possibility for the developing world, where having a one-and-done treatment and not having to rely on labs, staff, a lot of resources is what you're going to need in a lot of places.
You spoke with people who have undergone gene editing to treat disease. What do they tell you about the experience, and what does it feel like?
Yeah, I spoke with two people who are in a trial called ATTR amyloidosis, which basically affects the heart and also can affect the nerves in your limbs, causing weakness and burning sensations in the legs. Both patients I spoke with had a great response. One was in heart failure. He had been very active and all of a sudden started feeling exhausted all the time and short of breath. So he got into this trial, took a chance, and went to a research facility where these trials are done. It only took a few hours. You just lie in a bed, get this infusion. And, you know, that was 2 years ago, and he's doing so much better since then. His health has improved. He's back to walking a lot. The other man I spoke with is also doing really well. He underwent the same treatment and last fall went on a trek to Everest Base Camp. So he's in much better shape than a lot of us.
What are some of the risks?
Obviously, the idea that something can go into your body and start changing your DNA is pretty scary. And there is a lot of skepticism about this. One of the main questions people raise is, what do we not know? What are the unintended consequences of altering your genes? Is there something that you could find down the road? The other is that to treat diseases for which there are already other drugs or other drugs being developed, you know, is it worth the risk? Is it worth doing something where you don't know the consequences down the road? Is it worth the cost if it costs more money? So these are all questions that doctors and scientists and ethicists are wrestling with now.
That was senior writer Betsy McKay speaking with our colleague Cordelia James. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. I'm your host, Alex Osola. We had additional support this week from Cordelia James. Jessica Fenton and Michael Laval wrote our theme music. Our supervising producer is Catherine Millsop. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back this afternoon with our TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.